If you have your Bibles tonight, open up to Matthew chapter 6 and just put your finger there. We're going to get there in just a second, I promise. But a couple things tonight as we get kicked off on this new series that we're calling Ignite. I want to start off with a couple questions for you. We're talking about our personal time with God, and as we go the next couple weeks, a six-week series, we're going to be talking about our personal time with God. Some of you may call it your devotional time. Some may call it a quiet time. But what we're talking about is that time that you dedicate to sitting at the feet of Jesus. I'm going to use that phrase a lot tonight because it's the one I like. Sitting at the feet of Jesus, communing with God. That's the kind of idea of what we're doing with this series. And so I want to ask you a couple questions tonight that were asked of me just recently, a couple months ago, that kind of created some discontent in me. And here's the questions. First of all, do you look forward to your personal time with God each day, or do you see it as a chore? You don't have to answer out loud, by the way. You can just in your mind. Do you look forward to it with anticipation, or is it something to check off of your to-do list? Are you glad when that time is over? Be honest with yourself. Are you really kind of glad? Okay, I got it done. I can move on with my day, on to more important stuff. I mean, I know we'd never say that, but are you glad when it's done? Or do you have the feeling that you would just like to linger there for a while if you could? Is it so energizing, this time that you have with God, that you prioritize your life and your time around this schedule and you do anything to sit at the feet of Jesus tomorrow? Do you have a regular discipline, or is it just whatever happens? A couple of months ago, I was challenged by these questions and realized that I had slipped into a pattern that, and it just kind of snuck up on me. And the pattern in my life was that I was just doing it to check off a thing on a list so I could say, I'm a good pastor. I did my personal quiet time. I spent time with God. I read my Bible. Check. I'm good. And on with my day. And I realized, looking at those questions and having actually somebody ask those questions, that I had to do some work in my life. And so a couple of experiences, one of which I'll share a little bit later, really ignited my passion again. And that's what we're after the next 6 weeks as we kick off this new series, is that we want to help reignite your passion for God. My experience in ministry is that if I just did a poll of the room tonight and had to stand up, which we won't, but if I just did a poll of the room and I said, how's your walk with God? How's your time with Jesus? Have you sat at the foot of Jesus recently? My experience tells me that at any given time, about 80% of us would probably stand up and go, eh, it's not great. I mean, maybe it's not terrible, but it's not, it could be better. And I think inside of us as believers in Jesus, we want that back. We want that fire that we've had at different times in my life or different times of our lives. And so we're going to get to that over the next 6 weeks. But the challenge to us is that life happens. At various times in our life, things just get crazy. At different times in my life, I've been envious of people like monks and spiritual ascetics who have devoted their lives to communion with God. I mean, some days I think how great it would be if I could just retreat to a monastery and focus my attention on God for extended periods of time, much less chaos. But that's not reality for me. My wife would kill me if I left for a couple weeks to go to a monastery, first of all. In fact, I just want to give you a clear picture of what I think all of our lives are like by telling you my last 24 hours. It's been a doozy. Yesterday was a doozy. whatever. Yesterday was a day off for me, and so I started the day well. I got up about 6:15, and I made coffee. That's the first part of great spiritual discipline there. And I grabbed my Bible, and I sat in my chair in our computer room. And that chair is kind of my place, and I'm going to talk about that in a little while. But that chair is kind of my place, and so I sat there. And from there, I can look through our dining room, through our kitchen, out the front window in our kitchen that looks out to the east. And I can watch the sunrise over the cornfield that's to our east. And it was beautiful, and I read the Bible, and the house was still quiet, and it was great. And then everything began to unravel. The kids got up. We got Caleb off to school. That was fine. I went down to the basement to work on the room. Having another kid in the next couple weeks means that we've got to reshuffle some kids and rethink how we're going to stick everybody. And so working on a bedroom downstairs, and I went down and I painted the ceiling of the basement downstairs, and that went fine. And I put on up a ceiling fan, and that went good. I didn't kill myself via electricity, so that's awesome. And then I decided to paint the walls of the room, and so I painted the walls, and I was diligently painting away in my own happy little world until I got to the end, and I ran out of paint with, I kid you not, this much room left to paint. And if I thought I could have licked it out of the paint can, and licked it onto the walls, I would have. I mean, I was scraping every last little bit out of that out of the paint can, trying to get that one patch that, as of this moment, is still unpainted. This one little patch. You don't know how that irritates a type A personality like me, that there's this one patch of unpainted spot in my house. So I decided at that point that I'm going to have to go to Peoria and go to Menards and get that. So I decided I'm going to go ahead and work out while I'm in town. So I got ready, jumped in my car, turned the ignition, and the car didn't start. And I knew that the starter was kind of going out. But this time it wouldn't start. So I got this great idea that, by the way, I'm so not mechanically inclined. I decided that if I rolled the car down the driveway, that would start it. I could just turn the key and it would get going. Then I pushed the car back up the driveway when it didn't start. And at that point, I probably didn't even have to have gone to the gym because I was sweating and huffing and puffing. And I hope all my neighbors weren't watching and laughing at me, pushing my car back into the garage. And I came to town and I got that ready. I went home. I made an appetizer for our small group that meets on Tuesday nights. And we do an appetizer thing once a month and communion together. And so I had to get that ready. And, of course, in the midst of this, three boys, 6, 4, and 1. I don't need to say any more about that. And so that's going on. And then I go out and I decide for the first time in my life, I'm going to fix the car by myself. I'm not going to have my friend help me. So 45 minutes later, I found the starter, which I thought was a victory. Just that I found the thing. Eventually, after about 45 minutes, I go, oh, there it is. And then after a half hour later, I gave up. And my friend Corey came over. He knows what he's doing, and I hold the flashlight. Nothing makes me feel less like a man than holding the flashlight. And so I just hold the flashlight and watch him work. And so he started working on it. We had small group. At 9:45, we started working on it again. And when I say we, again, remember, he started working on it again. At midnight, we finished. And I turned the key, and we had done everything right, but apparently the new starter we got was a bad starter. And so it still didn't work. So tonight, when this is over, we get to go home and do it all again. And then I went inside and helped Jennifer icing cupcakes for her birthday party and dropped into bed at 12:30, got up at 6 o'clock this morning, or at least the alarm started going off at 6. We all, as a family, got in the van and drove to Brimfield to take the cupcakes to the school in the middle of the rain to drop them off. And then we drove the van from Brimfield to, this is really efficient, by the way, from Brimfield to North Peoria to drop me off here. And then Jennifer had a house to clean in East Peoria, so she had to take the other two to Glassford to drop them off at my parents' house before going to East Peoria, back to Glassford, back to Brimfield. Life just happens, doesn't it? And I could pretend that I'm the only one, and I'm not telling you that to make you feel sorry for me or say, aw, but it would be nice. Thanks. But just to say that all of us could tell stories like that, couldn't we? And maybe it wasn't this 24 hours. Maybe it was last 24 hours. Or maybe it was last week. Or there's times in our lives where the wheels just come off. And then pastors like me get up and start talking about, have you had your hour quiet time with God this morning? And it's just not that simple, is it sometimes? It's just not that simple. I know that we all have those stories. And so for the next 6 weeks, Cal and Tim and I want to give you some direction, some keys to making that time with Jesus come alive. So that it's not just another thing that I mark off the to-do list. It's something that I long for and something I do everything in me to not miss. The passage that we're going to look at tonight, we're talking about tonight, the secret of the shut door, is the first part of this series. The passage that we're talking about tonight is found in Matthew chapter 6. I said that already. It's found in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount is one of two of the big teachings of Jesus. Often the Gospels are filled with short little stories or times where Jesus, something happened or somebody asked Jesus a question and he responded. The Sermon on the Mount is three chapters, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. And just it's a more of a comprehensive teaching of Jesus. If you have a red letter Bible, it's all red, those parts. Okay, it's all Jesus talking. It starts with a famous passage in the Bible called the Beatitudes that starts with God blesses those who realize their need for him, or in your version, it might be, blessed are those who hunger after God. And then Jesus starts working through all kinds of different teachings. I like to tell people, if they don't know Jesus or don't know what Jesus teaches, to start with the Sermon on the Mount, because it's a lot of the ethics of Jesus. And Jesus talking about in this issue with adultery, and here's how to handle anger, and here's how to love your enemies, and all some of the real famous passages that you hear quoted all the time come out of the Sermon on the Mount. But in chapter 6, Jesus is talking, and he gets to talking about the needy, and he says, listen, if there's people that need stuff, don't make a big show out of providing their needs. In fact, what I want you to do is I want you to see to their needs in secret. Because when you do it in secret, God will celebrate what you've done and God will reward you. If you do it for show, if you do it so that everybody else will see what you've done, that's your reward. The applause of men is your reward enough. And so then he gets into verse 5, and I want to pick up and just read two verses here. And Jesus says in verse 5, and it'll be on the screen too. And now about prayer, when you pray, don't be like the hypocrites who love to pray publicly on street corners and in the synagogues where everyone can see them. I assure you, this is all the reward they will ever get. When you pray, go away by yourself, shut the door behind you, and pray to your Father secretly. Then your Father, who knows all secrets, will reward you. When I grew up in a King James Version only kind of environment. And so this is what I learned, the second part of this verse out of the King James Version. But thou, when thou prayest, I just do that when I read the King James, enter into thy closet, and when thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father which is in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. When thou prayest, enter into thy closet. When I was living in Denver several years ago, when I was going to graduate school, I know some people in our church actually went into the basement of their houses and they created what they called prayer closets or prayer rooms. And really, in faithfulness to this passage, they wanted to follow this passage just like Jesus taught it. And so they went into their basements and they created these rooms, and they weren't really big, like 8x8, 10x10, a smallish room that they would put like a comfortable chair in, maybe a place for some candles and some nice lighting, and a place that really helped them connect to God. And when they wanted to get this personal time away with God, they would go into these rooms and literally, they would shut the door behind them. They would enter into their closet and shut the door. Because they believed that to be faithful to Jesus, that's what it required of them. But I've always asked myself, I don't have one of those rooms. I think those rooms are a great idea. I some days wish I had one that was actually a little bit soundproof, that I could go into my house and tune out all the noises of my house. But I don't have one. And then I start asking myself, like, what about the person that lives in a studio apartment? Or what about the person whose closet is crammed with junk? I mean, do they have to clean out the closet to climb in the closet? And then I start asking, wait a minute, the people that Jesus was talking to, if you know anything about first century architecture, I don't assume you do, but if you know anything about first century architecture, they really lived in kind of one room houses. Often multiple generations living in the same house under the same roof. And so I asked myself, what is Jesus talking about when he says to people who really don't even know what a closet is, go into your closet? Have you ever asked this? I mean, what does that mean for us? And so started wrestling and trying to figure out what that is. So tonight we want to spend some time talking about what it means to enter into our closets and shut the door. First of all, we need to see the context. Jesus starts by saying, here's the negative example, and we get the first part of the verse where he says, you see the hypocrites who love to pray publicly on street corners and in the synagogues where everyone can see them. I assure you, they have the reward. Jesus says, come back. Jesus says, listen, there are these people in our culture, which they would have had, that they love to, when they pray, they love to stand up where everybody, the street corners, the idea that everybody sees you. This is a visible spot. This is the intersection. This is where people go. And they said there's people who love to stand on that street corner, and they love to lift their hands to heaven, and they like to pray in King James English, perhaps, except that King James wasn't alive. But if King James would have been alive, they would have prayed in King James English because they wanted everybody to notice how great their prayers were. They wanted everyone to notice how well they worded their prayers and how spiritual they were, and they wanted everybody to see them worshiping. And Jesus says, don't be like those people. Because those people have the reward. That's it. What they're doing right there and people walking by and going, that guy's spiritual, that's all they get for that. In essence, Jesus is saying God does not hear that prayer at all. It's a prayer for show. In contrast to that, Jesus talks about entering into the closet. This is going to feel like a tangent for just a couple minutes, but I want you to hang on. We'll come back to something. This in my hand is it's a bag we got from somebody. It's called a tallit. It has a Star of David on it, and it says in Hebrew, tallit, across the front. You can say that word with me if you want. Tallit. Tallit. You've learned Hebrew tonight. Excellent. Let me get this bag open. A tallit is also called a talis in some places, or you could probably just simply call it a prayer shawl. This particular prayer shawl is over 100 years old. Somebody loaned it to one of our staff members so that we could use it tonight. It's passed down from generation to generation in the family. And oftentimes a tallit, the more it's used and the older it is and the thinner it is and the more threadbare it is, the more it's considered holy, because it's said that lots of prayers have worn down the fabric. And so this one being 100 years old, it makes me nervous to touch it tonight. I'm not that guy. Tallits were worn primarily by men in Jesus' day. They think that men would have worn these all the time. In our day, men and women now today, depends on what branch of Judaism you're affiliated with, they would wear them at prayer times. The tassels you see on the bottom are mostly decorative, except on the corners. And on the corners, you have a special tassel here called a tzitzi. And that's going to be on the screen, too. It looks like tzit, tzit. But it's tzitzi. And I want you to read the text so you understand why that tassel is hanging there. Look up on the screen. Numbers 15 in the Old Testament says this: "Then the Lord said to Moses, give the following instructions to the people of Israel throughout generations to come. You must make tassels for the hems of your clothing and attach them with a blue cord." Hang on right there for just a second. There's no blue cord here. And if you're really into this, you can go on Wikipedia and look up tallit, and it'll tell you why the cord isn't blue on this one. It has to do with the procurement of blue dye. You learn all kinds of stuff from Wikipedia. But go on. And so it says, "When you see the tassels, you will remember and obey all the commands of the Lord instead of following your own desires and defiling yourselves as you are prone to do. The tassels will help you remember that you must obey all my commands and be holy to your God. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt that I might be your God. I am the Lord your God." So these tassels that hang down, and we have a picture for it up there on the screen. You can see it closer. This tassel here that's on there is to remind us, or remind the person wearing the prayer shawl, to obey all the commands of God. To obey them all. There's actually a special way that those are tied according to different rabbinic traditions. But it was worn by these men. And so still today, if you went into a Jewish synagogue, you would see this. They'd be wearing it something like this over their shoulders. And then comes the interesting part. When it came time to pray, they would take this and they would lift it up over their heads and they would pray like this. And there's a picture here of men standing at the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem praying. And you see the white shawl, see it like this one, and they've got it pulled up over their head. This is the great part. When they did this, when they pulled it up over their head, they called it going into their closet, or going into their inner room. That no matter where they are, no matter where they stood, no matter where they were, that they could pull this over their head, and in that moment, they go into their inner room, into their prayer closet. And so when Jesus comes along and he says, "I don't want you to stand on the street corner and pray so that everybody will notice you praying. I want you to go into your room." Jesus isn't talking about a location. We don't have to go home tonight and start construction of prayer closets. But what Jesus was talking about is entering into an inner place where I shut out the distractions of the world. See, when somebody would put the tallit over their head, you didn't go up and bother them and you didn't talk to them, because they were in that inner place. And when they were there, they weren't focused on the rest of the world. They were focused on what they were doing. And it was a sacred and a holy place and a holy time. See, Jesus isn't talking about location as much as he's talking about posture. He's talking about posture. There's two components here in Matthew 6 then, as we look at that with a whole new understanding. He says, when you pray, go away by yourself. So maybe get away from everybody and then shut the door behind you. Go into your closet and pray to your Father secretly. Then your Father, who knows all secrets, will reward you. Two ideas tonight that we want to spend a couple minutes with is one is what it means to shut the door in our time. I don't expect everybody to go out and buy a prayer shawl tonight. We could, and that'd be fine. But what does it mean for us today to shut the door? And then we want to talk a little bit about the power of secrets at the end for just a second. The question, as we talk about our personal time with God, what does it mean to shut the door? I mean, can I pray while I drive? Absolutely, I can pray while I drive mostly. Can I pray? Can I worship God while I'm on my mountain bike racing through the woods? I can. But there is a richness and a depth of relationship with God that I will never know until I create a distraction-free space in my life. I can pray to God driving my car. But there's a richness and a depth that I will never know until I rid myself of distractions in my life and go into my inner room and shut the door. If I'm going to get serious about knowing God and igniting my intimacy with God, then I have to take Jesus' words seriously and create spaces where I shut the door on everything else. There's two great examples in Scripture where Jesus does this himself. And we're not going to spend time looking at these tonight. You can look them up later. First one is Matthew 14. And in Matthew 14, Jesus has just finished feeding the 5,000. A crazy day by any stretch of the imagination. He's taught all day to the point where the people are so hungry that the disciples say, hey, you've got to feed them because they're starving. So they've been going all day and then Jesus feeds the 5,000. Just before that, he finds out that John the Baptist has been beheaded. And what we read in that section of Matthew is that the crowds are just getting insane. They're pressing in on him, just pressuring him. And Matthew 14 tells us that Jesus puts his disciples in a boat and tells them to row to the other side. And then he goes to the mountain by himself to pray. He goes to his secret place. He goes into his closet and he shuts the door on everything else. The other picture I have in my mind when I think of that, and maybe just a readjustment of the picture for you, is Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. Remember, they finished the Last Supper, and then they go into the Garden of Gethsemane, and Jesus takes the three disciples, Peter, James, and John, with him, and he goes in. It says he leaves them in a place, and then he goes off by himself to pray. And the picture I always had in my mind is Jesus praying, but the new picture I got is Jesus as a Jew with the prayer shawl over his head into his closet, into his secret place, and in that instance, to contend with God, if there's any other way, let this cup pass from me. So we see it in the life of Jesus, and there's a few others, but those are two to kind of give you a place to start. Two places where Jesus gets off and he shuts the door to all the distractions of life. So tonight, what I want to do for a couple minutes is give some steps for shutting the door of distraction in our lives. Ways to shut the door to the distractions in our lives. You can see that in your notes. You can fill those in if you want. The first one is to eliminate distraction. I've brought some of my favorite distractions, the things that get me off and going and get me away from, really focusing in on God. And that's one. That's my phone. Hold on just a second. Hello. Thank you. I'll tell them it's the banker. He's shown up here and he's offering us money to quit and go home for the night. No deal. All right. I'll make the call. Honestly, there are some of us that are addicted to this thing. I think they're evil. I'm sorry. I just can't stand my cell phone. I was in the gym today, and then the time I went and worked out for like a half hour and came back. Okay, that's somebody else calling me. That's JD. Where are you, JD? He's in here somewhere. Watch this. Here's what you do when somebody's calling you in the middle of your message or in the middle of our time to get away, you shut it off. And some of us, if we're going to get serious about our time with God, we're going to have to shut off our phones. Maybe pulling the prayer shawl over your head. Maybe pulling the prayer shawl over your head means shutting off the phone. And saying, there's a part of my life and there's a period in my life where I'm unavailable because I'm so fixed on my Creator that there's a time where everything else pales in comparison. Another of my favorite distractions is this one. I love it so much. It's my iPod. Seriously, it goes everywhere I go, and it's playing about 80% of the time. I have a little jack in my office plugs into it, a little jack in my car, and then, of course, the headphones. I mean, it's going all the time. And if I'm at home and I don't have it on, I have iTunes on, and I'm listening to music. But for me, maybe just me, but for me to really get serious about pulling the prayer shawl over my head, about going into my closet, means that this has to go for a time. And there has to be a space in my life where I shut it off and allow God to direct my thoughts and not the iPod and not the shuffle. Another distraction for me is this one. And this one, I just can't tell you how huge this is. This one is a huge distraction for me. And so often for me, I come into my office and try to do this in the morning. And it sits there with that pretty blue glow and says, check emails, surf the internet, read your friends' blogs, find out if the Cubs got rained out today. They didn't. They got snowed out. Crazy thing. This is a huge distraction. I told you Monday morning, I spent time reading my Bible in our computer room. And honestly, I'm sitting there reading my Bible and our computer's sitting right there. And I think it's talking to me. Come here. Come on. One game of solitaire. They talk. All right. The other one for me is this. And I just pulled this because this represents my to-do list. And that when I want to sit before God, all of a sudden, all the things that I've been fixing to do for the last 3 years come racing to my mind. Oh, there's that one nail that's popped in that behind that door in that closet. I must fix that now. And all of a sudden, things that weren't urgent, all of a sudden come racing to my mind and they feel urgent. And so for me, part of the prayer shawl and part of eliminating distractions and going into my closet and shutting the door means those distractions that I know most vex me, I have to put them all aside. I have to shut off my phone, turn off my music, shut down the computer, get rid of my to-do list. And even, and I want to be very careful how I say it, they are so cute and they are such a distraction. I mean, I love them and I have a responsibility to them as their dad. And they're part of the chaos in my life. Believe you me. But it means, let me just tell you, my struggle is I'm not going to shortchange them. On most nights I get home about 4:30 and my sons go to bed about 7:30. I get 3 hours out of 24 with them. And it's not fair to them for me to say, oh, now I'm spending my time with God, so you guys get lost. That's not fair to them. And so if I'm really going to be a man that follows hard after God, and I'm really going to cultivate a space where I go into my closet and shut the door, I need to honor those guys as much as possible and give them all of me when I can. And I've got to figure out some time between the time they go to bed and the time they get up in the morning to do the thing with God. And so for some of you that are parents like me and your kids are little and your house is crazy, it may mean shutting off Conan at night so I can get to sleep and get up early in the morning before anybody else does. For me to do that, for me to put on that mantle, may mean that I have to change my schedule around. Jesus, there's a passage of Matthew where it says Jesus went to pray all by himself throughout the night. And maybe for some of you that are night people, maybe it's after your kids go to bed, that now is the time when I'm really going to sit at the feet of Jesus when the house is all quiet and the craziness of life has kind of started simmering down a little bit. I have to eliminate distractions. Last week, we had two prayer times on Wednesday night and Thursday night. And really what we're trying to do with those prayer times, and there's going to be more of those coming onto the schedule, and I just want to help you with some misperceptions if you have any. All we're trying to do in those spaces is to create an environment where it's easier to step away from all the distractions so that you can check some of that stuff at the door and enter into a place where the focus is on worship and the focus is on communicating with God. That's all we're trying to do with those spaces. And we were talking in our small group last night about that. And Corey went and he was talking about the idea that it took him. He was there like an hour. And he said, it took me like an hour just to get all the distractions taken care of and all the stuff to simmer down. And I think for most of us, that's the way it is, that all that stuff is boiling up inside of us. And it takes a fair amount of time and a fair amount of practice and a fair amount of discipline to get to a place where we can quiet all the distractions in our lives, where we can pull the tallit over our head and put away the distractions. The second step towards shutting the door is to create a space. We're all creatures of habit, aren't we? I laugh at myself often. When I go to the gym, I use the same locker. I use the exact same shower. I hang my towel on the exact same hook. And usually that's no big deal. It can be negative sometimes when I get angry at the guy who dared to put his towel on hook number 7. If you're that guy, stop it. It's mine. But sometimes those habits can be good. Like when you walk into a funeral home, there's a space created there, and we've created a habit as a culture that you automatically start talking quiet. And when you go into Chuck E. Cheese, you don't. You start yelling, "Get back here!" So one of the steps to shutting the door is to create spaces that condition me to quiet myself and focus on God. But when I'm at home, I have this... somebody gave us a green leather chair that sits in our computer room. I told you about it earlier. And if I'm going to read my Bible at home, and if I'm going to pray, and if I'm going to sit in that quiet place and listen for God's voice, it's 95% of the time in that green chair. Because it's my space. And when the house is quiet and I sit in that chair, something happens inside of me and I begin to ache for His presence. And there's just a certain thing that happens because I've created this little space for me. Maybe your space is a prayer room that you build in your house. Maybe your space is in the office. I can do this in the office here sometimes. If I get here early enough in the morning, I can create a space where there's no distractions as long as I close the computer screen lid down. Wherever you need to create that space. The third one is to deal with distractions. You think I've gone senile, but I promise you that once you've eliminated the distractions to begin with, they come back. Because I haven't told you my biggest distraction yet. It's this one. And I carry it with me everywhere I go. See, I can get rid of all that other stuff, but my brain goes everywhere I do. And my brain is capable of like some crazy stuff. So I can be reading my Bible and then all of a sudden realize that I haven't heard anything or remember anything in the last 10 verses because I was thinking about the Cubs. Or I was thinking about the girl that I like in fifth grade, and to get her to like me, I threw mud at her. And that didn't work so well. I'll tell you, in case you're wondering, it didn't work so well, but why am I thinking about this right now? It makes no sense. I'm trying to read the Bible and I'm thinking about something I did when I was little and it's gone. And it's craziness what my brain does. Isn't it? And so the battle of spiritual discipline is, as I'm sitting at the feet of God, it's not one thing that I do. It's not just take the prayer shawl and put it over my head. It's put the prayer shawl over my head and then wait, because my mind will make up stuff to distract me. And I've got to do something with all those distractions. I was meeting with some guys over dinner one night, and we were talking about this idea of distractions. And one of the guys laid out this great battle plan for distraction that he has. And he takes a piece of paper whenever he's going to do this. He takes a piece of paper, and pretend this is your piece of paper. It can be a journal or just a piece of paper you have. And he starts off and he draws a line all the way down it like this. And then he draws a line across the bottom like this. Okay? And so what he does is in this space up here, he starts writing what he's thinking, and so he's praying to God, and so he's asking God some stuff, and I'm asking you, God, about this, and God, I feel like you're saying this to me, and so I'm writing that down, and this is something I read in Scripture, and now I'm copying Scripture, and whatever he's doing here, and man, I'm really hungry for Monaco's Pizza, and Monaco's Pizza really is the best pizza in Peoria, but you can't get a Monaco's Pizza delivered, because it gets soggy when it sits in the foil, so you really have to go to Monaco's to get really good pizza, and I ought to take my family to Monaco's Pizza. So that's what we really ought to do, because my kids need to know how great Monaco's Pizza is and how when I lived in Denver, speaking of Denver, I wonder if they still have snow. I buy it with all the snow they had this year. The mountain or the whitewater rafting has to be great. And oh man, that's so cold. And isn't it cold right now? You understand how this works? Maybe I'm the only one, but this is how my quiet time often looks. And I have to have a place. And so what he says he does is when I get that thought, man, I ought to take my family to Monaco's Pizza, that I just write out over here, Monaco's Pizza. Monaco's Pizza. And the idea is that, no, listen, this is serious. This is good stuff. The idea is that when I take it out of my brain and I park it over here, now I don't need to obsess on it anymore. Or I'm supposed to stop at Kroger on the way home tonight. Kroger. And I write it over here with the huge fat marker that you can't, whatever. I park it over there because if I don't, I'm going to sit there and think, I hope I don't forget. I hope I don't forget. I got to remember Kroger. I have to remember Kroger. I'll still forget it later in the day, but when I'm doing my quiet time or my devotion, it gets really, like, intense. And so I have to park it over here so I'll remember it. The other thing that happens to me is, so I parked that, and now I'm back over here. God, I feel like you're just saying this to me. And, wow, God, I get this sense that you're telling me you love me. And, wow, I'd really like to do a study on love sometime, like study all the times in the Bible that the word love is used. And it's easy at that point to start getting distracted off onto this academic thing. So he takes this space down here and he writes, study love. So later on, if he's looking for something to study, he has all the stuff that he's interested in and wants to go down a rabbit trail on. This is kind of rabbit trail land down here. And then he goes back to this. And you don't have to do it that way, but it's a way that he manages all the distractions in his life. And I love that because it allows me to arrange it. And what it does is eventually, as you do that enough, you begin to create the ability in yourself to do it on your own, to park it on your own. Just an idea. The fourth one is to create a plan. I think that we all like freestyling. We think freestyling is cool, like freestyle skiing or whatever it is you like. I mean, freestyling is fun. And sometimes you think, man, Charlie, what do you do for your quiet time? And sometimes I freestyle. I'll be real honest. There's times I go into that and I don't have a lot planned. And it's just like, God, where are you leading me today? And I have enough knowledge of Scripture that so often God will lead me to a passage and I'll spend time there. But you may not have that. That's okay. I think that in your case, you need to have a plan. And so here's some things maybe to help create a plan for that time. So once you get in your place and you've dedicated the time and you've shut out the distractions, maybe a focused reading plan. This is BibleGateway.com, www.BibleGateway.com. And if you go to their main page and then click on additional resources and then scroll all the way to the bottom, you get to reading plans. And this is awesome. They have all these reading plans in there. So you can read the Bible in a year. That's at the top one. Or you can read a biographical reading of the Bible. Just kind of hits some people. Or you can do a survey. This gets every book of the Bible or chronological. They have these different kinds of reading plans. And if you click on those, it tells you what to read each and every day. And so you can kind of set out your own plan. So, okay, when I get the distractions gone and I get to this place, I have a plan. I have a place where I'm going. Or maybe you need to develop a prayer plan. I had a professor in college who had a prayer plan, and it was really simple. He said basically, on Monday, I'm going to pray for my family. And on Tuesday, I'm going to pray for my neighbors who don't know Jesus. And on Wednesday, the focus of my prayer is going to be the pastors at my church. As much as you can. And on Thursday, and you see what I'm getting at? I'm going to pray for missionaries. He developed a plan for his prayer life because he found that he was so scattered. And so he started focusing, okay, here's what I'm going to do with this time. And then the third thing that I would suggest you do is spend some time listening. That's hard at first, just being quiet and asking this one question. Jesus, what do you want to say to me? What do you want to say to me? And start with 3 minutes. I'm telling you, it's going to feel like an eternity of just silent before God. And over time, you'll grow and you'll be able to sit longer and longer and ask Jesus, what do you want to say to me? The fifth secret of the shut door is to extinguish distractions again because they're back again. And I did this on purpose because it's really, I mean, this is critical. We need to understand that the battle with distractions, I hate to disappoint you, it is never going to go away. And all the evidence I see says that spiritual people that are more spiritual, much more mature than I, and they say, you know what? I've been following after Jesus for 50 years, and I got to tell you, the distractions are still there. They still come, and I don't need to feel guilty about that, and I don't have to beat myself up. I just have to deal with them and park them over there. Unless maybe there's a distraction that keeps on coming back and you start getting the sense that maybe this isn't just my brain. Maybe this is God. And maybe sometimes I need to take that distracting thing. So I'm over here doing this and I hear this. You know what? You were harsh with Caleb. You need to apologize. And I go, oh, that's a distraction. I'll put it over here. Apologize. And then I'm back over here and I get the, no, you were really harsh. I'll put it over here again. Really harsh. Caleb, done. Back to this. And the third time, it usually takes at least 3 for me to pick up on it. Maybe all of a sudden I get a sense that maybe this is what God wants to do with me today. And so maybe I need to start praying about what I should be doing with Caleb. And God, how do I fix that? And how do I fix what's broken in me that makes me react to him that way? and how do I make it right by Him? And I offer it to God in prayer. Maybe that's the most important thing God wants to do with me. And so once in a while, maybe one of these distractions, we start seeing that maybe it's not a distraction, it's really God. So back to the text, Jesus says, enter in, shut the door behind you. And then He says, pray to your Father secretly. I have two mediums for writing. And just a couple minutes about secret, and then we want to do something here at the end. Two mediums for writing. One is my blog. I write on my blog a lot, probably too much. A blog, for those of you who don't know, is a weblog. It's basically an online journal. And on my blog, I write about my kids and movies I like and don't like and music and theology and books I'm reading and the Cubs and the Broncos and NCAA basketball. Pretty much anything that comes to mind, I write on my blog about. And you can all go look at my blog. I'm not trying to pad my stats. Wouldn't hurt. But I'm not trying to pad my blog stats. Anybody in the world can access my blog and see what I think about all kinds of silly stuff. The other medium I have for writing is this black book, and it's my journal. And nobody's ever seen this book. My wife is a much greater journaler than I. I've never seen her book. There's a secret communication between her and God that's hers and God's. And there's me bearing my soul before God in this book. And in this book, I'll be honest, it's not always pretty. Sometimes it's a lot of questions and anger sometimes and despair and frustration and just a lot of stuff that I'm wrestling with. And it's a private, secret conversation between God and I where I've gone in and shut the door and talked to God in secret. Great relationships have secrets, not from each other, but with each other. There's something holy. I love doing weddings where you're standing at the altar and there's this couple standing. And I always feel like, in some ways, as the pastor, I feel like such an intruder. That this couple has all these, I hope, these secrets and this identity and this intimacy that I almost feel like as the pastor sometimes I'm like, that's holy and that's yours. And I need to stay out of that because that's between you guys and that's good. And I just think about the intimacy of a couple who's been married for 40 or 50 years and they have all this history and all this intimacy and all this secrecy between them. And it's beautiful and good. And I think what Jesus is after is when I've cultivated that quiet place, that I begin growing in an intimacy with Jesus and a depth where God and I have a conversation that goes back, in my case, not very many years. But I know people that have years and years worth of journals of the journey of them and God. And this is what's growing in me slowly, but this sense of intimacy between God and I where I pour out frustration and God answers my prayers. I look back to some of this stuff and I'm just like, I was in such despair and God answered. It's better now. And it gives me faith and it helps me get stronger and I have more faith in God because of the struggle and the journey and the secret conversation between God and I. I want to finish tonight with a quotation and then an exercise together. The first is this quotation from Bob Sorge's book, Secrets of the Secret Place, which is what we're basing a lot of this series off of. And he says this, the secret place is your portal to the throne, the place where you taste of heaven itself. So tonight, what I want to do is I want to give you a space to go into your secret place, to go into your closet, to go into your inner room and shut the door. It's kind of hard with a room this big. Steve's just going to start playing, or Harold's going to start playing underneath. And Steve, you look funny. Harold's just going to play. And what I'd like you to do is a couple things, just a couple rules. One is I'd like you to spread out. There's plenty of seats and few enough of us that you shouldn't have to sit by anybody. And if this is for you, maybe you want to take your coat and pull it over your head like the prayer shawl. I know sometimes for me, I found that I like that idea, and I take even like a sweatshirt and I pull it over my head, and there's something to me about covering my head and humility before God that just helps me feel like I'm connected to God, and that's good for me. And so I want you to spread out, and I want you, if you want to kneel or if you want to lay down, lay down. Whatever it is, get the distractions gone. Shut off your phones. And you can sit here as long as you like. The alarms come on at 10:30. So as long as you like, as long as it's before 10:30, and you can just sit here. And the second thing we're going to do is we're going to make this a holy place, and we're just not going to talk. Nothing. So I'm going to pray here in a second, and this room is just going to be silent. And if you bump into somebody, you can gesture. You don't have to say a word to them. And we're just going to give you a place where I know life is busy and crazy. I mean, I've got a starter to replace tonight. And yet there needs to be a place where I sit at the feet of Jesus. And I take the prayer shawl and I pull it over my head and say, this is the most important thing in the world to me. So just want to give you freedom to do that for a little while tonight. And then we'll see you next week. Let me pray. And then we'll be silent. Jesus, I admit that oftentimes life gets crazy and I get distracted and we are prone to wander. All we like sheep have gone astray. And Jesus, I know you're sitting in that place waiting for me to come back, longing for me to sit at your feet, longing for me to pull the tallit over my head and shut the door to all the stuff of life. And Jesus, I pray that you would be faithful, Holy Spirit, in the next couple minutes, that as we do that, that you would meet us in that place. And you would wrap us up in your love. In your name I pray.